How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 137 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder. Subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page as well. You can find us on audioboom.com too and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog there, Thunder Road, and you can find all my Thunder stuff on there. It's under the sports tab on the site. On every day of the week, Monday through Friday. I'm recording this one after the Thunder just got shellacked, 128-100 by Chicago. Second night of a back-to-back, but man, the Thunder didn't look good. Still a home game against a team that was 24-25 coming in. They got rocked. Second night of a back-to-back, but just the way they lost this one, the fact that it was at home, I think certainly one of the worst losses of the season. Probably not their worst loss, but certainly one of the worst losses of the season. After the game, I went into the hallway outside the media room with Vinny Goodwill. I'm not 100% sure how great the sound is recorded on my phone. There were some people walking by cleaning up the arena and stuff, pushing some bins. So there might be some natural sound in the background. But Vinny Goodwill, Bulls beat writer for CSN Chicago. I recorded with him. Quick break, and then we'll get to the 20-minute conversation with Vinny.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I'm here in the bowels of Chesapeake Energy Arena with Bulls beat writer Vinny Goodwill, who's kind enough to come on with me after the Thunder just got creamed 128-100. Did you see this one coming?
No, I didn't see this coming, but you don't see anything coming with the Bulls. They're a very unpredictable team. They're erratic. They're chaotic. But they're never boring, so at least there's always something to talk about. But on this night, they were very good. This was the best game that they put together probably in about 2 months as far as efficiency, following the game plan defensively, as far as keeping Russ away from causing havoc for 48 minutes. And, you know, it was some good vibes in the locker room for the first time in a very, very long time.
So let's talk that third quarter. Bulls won that quarter, I think it was 39-26. They shot 15-20 in the quarter. They were getting to the rim whenever they wanted, and the Thunder ran the exact same thing every single possession. It was Russell Westbrook comes down, ball screen from one of his bigs, whether it was LaVerne or Adams or whatever it was. He was going to go left. Maybe he'd cross over right, try to go to the rim, or he'd kick for a corner three, or he'll try to dump off to somebody. And it, like, kind of worked, and they shot 8 of 24 in the quarter. But, like, they got killed. When was the last time the Bulls played a quarter like that one?
I can't recall the last time this Bulls team, played that efficient a quarter, that great. They weren't great defensively per se, because I contend that there was a stretch where Anthony Morrow missed three straight open threes where nobody was anywhere near him. So a lot of times he's going to have to be lucky. But as far as being solid defensively and following the game plan, like you said, they pushed him left on the screens. He always saw a man in front of him and a man on his hip. And he never really was able to get completely comfortable. And if guys aren't making shots, you're going to force him into a different space, and I think defensively was so much better, even offensively. 15-20, that's an excellent percentage. But defensively, I think it keyed their offense. It made them relax a little bit more. And once Wade got going offensively in that third quarter, Jimmy Butler was kind of able to take a step back a little bit to start the third. Dwayne started hitting shots and started setting guys up off the double teams. And at that point, you knew the game was over.
Russ had no space.
None.
There was none. Like, there was that dunk he had was absurd.
Yeah.
I don't know how he created room in order to get up for that dunk. But, like, there was a layup that he had about midway through the third quarter where there were actually four guys in the paint. And, like, it was one of those plays where he went left and crossed over to his right and then went, like, two steps into the lane and somehow ended up getting a layup that, like, kind of looked open because he's just explosive and fast and was able to get there. But, like,
that's not a play where pretty much anybody is able to get an open look on that sort of play. Like, there are not really any guys who, unless you're the most explosive point guard in the league, you're probably not getting a look like that. Like, the looks that he was able to create for himself tonight were just, they weren't.
They were athletic looks.
Yeah, they were athletic looks.
They were athletic, not game plan looks, not the looks that even Russ wants to take for himself. Like, you know,
they were exhausting ones, is the thing. Like, that's the kind of stuff, when people say, like, stuff is going to wear on you, whatever it is, and we haven't really seen Russ wear down. Like, he didn't play poorly tonight, I didn't think. Yeah. And he played really well in the Spurs game when they lost last night, I thought. Like, tonight was not on him. They played bad defense, and they played poorly as a team. This game wasn't necessarily on him. But, like, when people talk about the wear of a season on a guy using that many possessions, like, these are the types of looks that kind of wear on you. It's not the open, uncontested catch-and-shoot threes. It's having to create every single possession in that third quarter that kind of gets to you.
Well, for me, I always look at the type of easy looks that guys get just off the flow of the offense or the flow of your teammates. And I'm not one to, you know, bag on the type of season that he's having because the numbers are incredible. But when you have to work that hard on every possession, not necessarily tonight, you know, tonight is a sample size for what it's been for 50 games, but, you know, when the mold is created for you to have to create like this all the time, mentally it becomes fatiguing because you wind up taking the very first good look that you have, and sometimes that's not in the flow of the offense. Sometimes that can disrupt it because you're like, man, if I don't take this look now with 20 on the shot clock and just one guy in front of me, I'm not going to get another good look. Nobody else is going to make a shot. And I think that wears on you because you're playing a mind game with yourself, and it also wears on your teammates because they don't know exactly when they're going to get shots, how they're going to get shots, and everything else. I think it's remarkable that they've been able to string together wins throughout all this. They're relative a winning team. Like, they're going to be a scary team to play in the playoffs, you know, and assuming they get there, and I think they will. But just how tough is that to depend on one guy like that every night and to have to take these type of hard shots? The Bulls are a top 10 defense, but they're not a scary defense. You know, they don't have intimidating shot blockers. You know, they're very, when they're good, they're very solid. Their position, their defensive rebound, and because they don't turn the ball over a lot, they're able to get back. But they're not this devastating defensive team. And if they can do this on a one-night basis, one-night sample size, everything else, and make the night tough for us, you wonder how it's going to play for the rest of the season for those guys.
You know what this is, though? This is also the Kanter effect.
Yes.
Like, he was – I don't know how much Enes Kanter you watched over the last 5-6 weeks.
He's good. I've been a huge Kanter fan.
He is, at least as an offensive player, mm-hmm. he is a crazy good offensive player. And, like, okay, just look at the last time. It's not quite the same scenario because Jimmy Butler was sick and, like, shouldn't have even been playing in that game probably. And he didn't even have a bucket the last time they played. And the Thunder base, they won by 15. Like, it was basically a game like this, though, where they were up 20-something in the fourth quarter and they killed him, and they probably could have won that game by more. But Kanter was 9 for 11 in that game. Mm-hmm. He had 20 or 22 off the bench. He had 20 and 11, I think it was, off the bench. He was huge in that game. It was a game where Donovan ended up using the Kanter and Adams lineup a lot in that game. And this time he went the opposite. Like, because Kanter wasn't there, and because he doesn't necessarily want to play LaVern at the 4, I think he's more comfortable with LaVern at the 5, he ended up playing, like, Andre Roberson at the 4 as a stand-in at the 4, which is something that I'm cool with Billy trying. He tried that in the playoffs last year. It worked really well against Golden State in the playoffs. And Billy's an experimental guy when it comes to lineups, especially when he's trying to figure stuff out when guys are injured. And I totally understand why he's going to go ahead and try that. But just the fact that he was trying it in this game, which was a heavy Adams-Kanter lineup game last time, shows how much he's trying to grasp at straws to try to figure out what he can do with the bench lineups when Kanter's not there. Because, like, so when Russ is, have you looked at the on-off numbers are crazy with Kanter in the last 5 weeks? Because the last 5 weeks, when Russ is off the floor, the offense actually isn't that bad. When Russ is off the floor and Kanter's on the floor, they have a 110 offensive rating, which is incredibly good. And it's because Kanter's just been so good offensively. And now, like, they don't have that margin of error. And, like, we talk about, the reason I bring it up is because you're talking about how Russ has to work so hard for buckets. Like, when Kanter's in the game, you throw Kanter in the game with him, and all of a sudden, he can give it to him in the post. He can take a rest, or he can run a pick and roll with Kanter, and a defender has to make a decision. Like, it's not just on Russ, and it's a big offensive loss.
No, it's a huge burden to carry. I think about Dwayne Wade. You know, me and Wade talk about it all the time. He talks about Russ's numbers and says, you know, I remember what it was like having to be that guy, you know, for those 2 years in Miami with no Shaq, and he was just getting back completely healthy again and everything else. And he was like, those 2 years exhausted me. And that's why he says it was so much easier for me to welcome a LeBron and welcome a Chris Bosh, because that load to carry. Yeah, the numbers look great. And he had two of the best shooting guard years, not named Michael Jordan, in the history of the game.
That 08 season was 08-09, that year on the scoring title, was crazy.
And he said, I was so tired at the end of the season. And he was like, and it wasn't even that we made a long progress. He said, we got knocked out in the first round. And it was because so much was on me every night. And he didn't have a Cantor or Adams to play with. And he had like an older Jermaine O'Neal and Patchwork guys that they were just trying to work with. So when you see a guy like Adams, who to me compliments a guy like Cantor, because you don't have to worry about Adams being that low post threat. When you got two bigs in the game, that's the biggest reason basically why they say the bigs don't work, the bigs kind of don't work, is because you have to worry about feeding both guys in the post. Well, one guy doesn't really have that type of game, the way he needs bulk touches, and he's able to screen, offensive rebound, do all the little things offensively, then that leaves that for Cantor, because that's what Cantor does. And then defensively, you know what Adams is going to bring. And you honestly, you know what Cantor doesn't. But that's the way that you can play two bigs together and not really worry about there being chemistry problems, space issues, everything like that. So when you take one out, it puts more of a burden on Adams to kind of be that guy. In addition to Russ having to create everything. And it's, you know, this is a team that's, you watch this team every night. You know, this is a team that you're going to win games off the will of Russell Westbrook and off the strength and size of Adams and Cantor. You're not necessarily going to win off of Oladipo scoring 25 or Robertson, you know, hitting shots, kind of gravy. You're going to win with those bigs and that point guard. And if you take one off from that equation, it's going to be difficult night to night.
You think Jimmy Butler's a top 10 player? Is he a top 10 player?
I think you have to put him there.
He was really good tonight.
He was really good tonight.
He's definitely on the fringe. Like, he's definitely a top 15 player.
Definitely top 15. I mean, if you go, it just comes down to, okay, are you including DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis on the list because they're not playing for winning teams or above 500 teams? And technically, Jimmy Butler's playing on a 500 team right now. But because he plays both ends of the floor and plays it extremely well, to me, I think you can have the argument Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard. I think the answer is probably still Kawhi Leonard.
I'm going Kawhi.
And so am I. But I think you're at the point where you have to legitimately have the conversation. I think he's better than Paul George now. But I didn't think that was the case last year. I think now he's taking that leap. And I think that just in the fact that you can say, okay, Kawhi Leonard is the best two-way player in basketball, but Jimmy Butler ain't that far behind. I think that puts him in the top 10, you know, top 12, you know, guys in the league. I think he has to be there.
I think that's fair. I agree with you. I think he's better than Paul George. Paul George just kind of stagnated the last 3 years or so.
With that injury is tough. I know last year he looked like he came back from it fully, but when you have that injury plus the Olympics, you don't really get a lot of time to rest, and plus you're battling, dealing with confidence and everything. Don't get me wrong. He's come back, and he's played a lot better the last 2 months than he did the first couple months of the season, but I still think that just on a night-to-night basis, because of everything Jimmy Butler has to carry, I think he's probably a notch better than what Paul George is right now.
Yeah, I think the big difference is if you've got – Jimmy Butler is a better creator for his teammates off the dribble.
Yes.
Like, Paul George, that's always been – it's not a flaw of
it's
his.
It's what it is.
It's just like when you've got a player who's that great, we're talking top 12 players.
The margin's thin.
Yeah, we're talking surefire all-stars. Right. Like, you gotta find something. And, like, Jimmy Butler is pretty good at creating for guys off the dribble. And Paul George is not necessarily great at that. That's not the best part of his game. And they kind of do a lot of other stuff pretty similarly. Paul George is probably a little longer and maybe can guard bigger forwards than Jimmy. Like, a really big forward, Paul George is probably better at. But I think Jimmy Butler's probably better at, like, the small guards.
And
I'd rather have him guarding those guys.
Jimmy's stronger and more compact. So, Paul being a longer, rangier guy, he can cover a little bit more space. But I think Jimmy's probably better guarding a guy like Russell. You know,
right. Because, guarding Harden.
Because
something like that.
Because he can smother him in a different way, whereas Paul George's sort of length allows him to left. Almost kind of like in a way a guy I used to cover in his later career, Tayshaun Prince, but Tay could lay off of you and come back to you quicker because he had long arms. But if long arms don't bother you and strength and bulk does, then that's where a guy like Jimmy is going to excel. I mean, look, you can make the argument next to LeBron James, obviously. You can't have a conversation about who the next best player is in the Eastern Conference without at least mentioning him in the conversation. You got Isaiah Thomas and Kyle Lowry and Giannis, and they're all going to be in that conversation basically where you're splitting hairs between, you know, basically those three or four guys. Maybe even a DeRozan, although I think he's become more of a gunner this year as opposed to, you know, previous years. But we talk about effects on both ends of the floor. There's not a player who probably has to do more than Jimmy Butler does. I can't think of a two-way player who has that much responsibility on him and has to score 25. Like, Kawhi has a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge to lean on, and he has the shooters, and he has the Popovich system and everything else. There's no type of structure like that in Chicago. And that's no shot to Dwayne Wade, but he's 35 years old. So Jimmy basically is looking at it, well, I got to defend the best player. I got to set the table, be the point forward. I got to score 25 a night, maybe 35, maybe 40. That's a lot, and I wonder what type of physical toll that's going to take on them.
It's interesting the way the league is going now. There are so many teams. Like, it feels like there are more than usual amount of teams that have one really, really, really good player, and everything revolves around them. Like, we saw two of them tonight, and it doesn't necessarily prohibit you from being a really good team. Like, Houston is one of those teams. And Houston is, I think, by everybody's measurement, top five team, right?
Yeah.
Like, and Houston is certainly one of those teams. It's interesting the way that is sort of kind of taking over the game.
I talked about this with a couple of executives around the league, probably in the past 2 weeks or so. I said, we were just talking about how the numbers have just grown. You know, guys are the usages of Russ and Harden and all these guys, they're doing so much because they're taking up so many possessions. The offensive game plans are revolving around them. And I said, I don't think that it's necessary that these guys are just so much better than the previous generation. I think that, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it seems like the second options aren't what they used to be. The third options aren't what they used to be. You could run, think about a second option back, and I hate to go, this is my day type of thing, but think about second options 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. James Worthy, Kevin McHale, those guys are second bleeping options. You know what I'm saying? You know, or a Joe Dumars or a Clyde Drexler, second options. Penny Hardaway, second option. Think about how talented and gifted those guys are. Nowadays, they play, they'd be the first option and the second option and the third option. So it's kind of where the numbers are cool, where Harden can put up a 50 and 16. But you're like, man, who else is doing work?
I have a theory, too.
Okay.
That I think the league, and this kind of happened, this is a Spurs thing, it's a bunch of other things, too, but the league has gone in a direction where there are so many more specialists now than there were 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, there are so many more. There were three-point specialists, kind of, you know, back in the day, but that was really the only kind of specialist. You didn't really see nearly as many specialists you do now. Now, all of a sudden, you see 3-and-D guys. Like, 3-and-D wasn't a term 15 years ago. No one was saying 3-and-D. Like there were guys who, maybe there were guys who played perimeter defense and shot threes, but no one said 3-and-D.
You know that guy was named? Bruce Bowen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
Bruce Bowen, whose free throws still I will never understand how a dude can lead the league in three-point percentage and shoot like 50% from the free throw line or whatever he shot. But that's what I'm saying. You mentioned the Spur. Like, it started kind of with the Spurs. They started bringing in specialists, and that was like a market inefficiency for them. They were like, we're going to bring in guys who are really, really, really good to great at like two or three things, and they're only going to do those two or three things. And we're going to have three great Hall of Famers. We were going to splice in the middle of those. Everything's going to go through them. And then the guys who are really good to great at those two or three things are only going to do those, and we're going to be fine. And they became the Spurs. And everyone just kind of started doing that. Now, like, the Thunder are a team of pretty much exclusively specialists. Like, yes. Robertson's a specialist, and Morrow's a specialist, and Kanter is, like, an expanded specialist, but he's an offensive specialist. And, like, aside from even, like, Oladipo, his skill set, you wouldn't think he's a specialist, but the Thunder have used him as a 3-and-D guy this year.
Yeah.
Like, he's pretty much just catch and shoot on offense. He doesn't handle the ball much, and he guards perimeter defenders, guys, ball handlers pretty well. And, like, they pretty much, it's just Russ and Adams, who you wouldn't say are specialists. Like, this team is pretty much all specialists. I think that probably has something to do with it, too, because a specialist isn't going to jump outside of his realm when you got a guy like Russ or Harden or Butler there.
Well, I also think that guys at a younger age now see what can make you successful in the league, as opposed to saying, okay, I'm going to be this all-around player and be great at or be really good at four, five, or six things. Hey, if I can come off and just be a gunner. Hey, if I can just be a defender. Hey, if I can just be a really great rebounder. You know, that's something that can make you a lot of money. It can clearly define you. It's something, a marketing thing that you can, not marketing in a wide way, but marketing as far as marketing yourself to a team that they know what they're going to get from you. And it makes you easier to place. So I'm not surprised that the league is going here. I will say I'm slightly disappointed. He's almost like where the, you know, the in vogue thing to say now is, if you're not taking a layup, then you got to take a three. There's nothing in between. Like, there's no other place on the floor that you can hit a shot from or you can develop something from. So guys aren't developing their games in that place, in that space now. And I think that's why you see, you know, if you look at in the playoffs, even, you know, Golden State, they struggle in the playoffs because the things that work in the regular season on a night-to-night basis get sort of shut down and compacted in a way in the playoffs that, not that they don't have counters, but when you have more specialization and those specializations get taken away, what else do you have to lean on? And I think it makes for compelling basketball in the playoffs as opposed to the regular season, but I think that's something, you know, there's something to that. The same way you broke down Oklahoma City, think about breaking down Golden State without minus Kevin Durant. Think about Zaza Pachulia, specialist. Draymond Green, sort of a, kind of a specialist, if you think about it in a way. Like a 5-tool guy, but defender, rebounder, facilitator. All these little different things that sort of make him to be a great player that he is. Klay Thompson, 3-and-D. Stephen Curry, greatest shooter ever. Ever, right? Shooter. So the thing is, now when there's fewer things that you can do, there's easier ways for the scouting report to become more compact over a two-week period. And they're going to take away things that you have to develop counters for it. So I think it's going to make for a compelling playoffs, honestly. I don't think necessarily it's going to be this romp that everybody more so expects. I think it's going to be a rocky road. But, you know, I do think you're right. I think that this league is becoming more specialization, and I wonder if the scouting is reflecting that.
Anything to plug before we go? Anything you're working on?
No, nothing really to plug that I'm working on. Just go to csnchicago.com/Bulls and you'll see my mug, my, you know, work, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm not much of a self-promoter unless you go to Twitter and I'm making fun of people.
What's your Twitter handle again?
@VGoodwill, VGoodwill.
All right, well, I'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to be previewing the game against Memphis Thunder at Memphis on Friday night. But until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.